right.
Okay. Good. Here we go. Today we continue our discussion about industrial archaeology with Judy Birmingham from the National Trust of Australia. Judy, last time we spoke of the value of keeping our industrial heritage. What industries in New South Wales are represented?
Well, it depends really how you divide them up. Virtually all industries leave some sort of remains behind them. The traditional way of dividing up industries, I suppose, is into primary industries, which can be extractive ones like mining, whether you're mining for gold or iron or coal and fossil fuels, or they can be rural primary industries such as grazing and wool and agricultural, or forest products, timbering. Then there are the secondary or processing industries such as brewing, winemaking, brickmaking, lime kilns, lime working, which are processing those products and also leave structures on the landscape. And then you've got all the tertiary ones, manufacturing, as well as things like town services, electricity and gas works, and transport. All everything to do with transport, rail and roadways, bridges, and so on, all tend to be classed under tertiary industry. So that's one sort of division, which is quite a handy one when you're looking for sites and trying to file them in an index. But then another sort of quite different dimension on looking at these industrial remains is the sort of remains they leave behind on the landscape. And in some instances, these are just sort of scars or marks on the landscape, like old road cuttings or abutments of old bridges, or the sort of holes and piles of slag that you get on a mining site, say, or the settlements associated with them, the bits of old chimney stack and little sort of rubbly foundation walls, through, on the other hand, to the much more heavily structured remains of the secondary and tertiary industries, where you're dealing with large buildings, like large factory buildings, or, of course, power stations, which can be even bigger. And on the whole, I suppose, as you get to the latter end of the scale, it's those that create the more difficulties as far as preservation is concerned, because you've got to decide how you're going to cope with this type of structure in a much more positive fashion. And I might actually just add, there is a third dimension, which is also quite interesting when you're looking at these industrial remains, and that is who owns them. And it's not always realised, I think, that it's the state itself which owns, I suppose, anything up to about 90% of the really rich industrial heritage of this state. That is to say, the Department of Railways, Department of Main Roads, the Sydney Water Board has the most marvellous heritage sort of tucked away in those great water catchment areas, and the Mines Department, which owns a great many of the mining sites. I mean, those are the sort of areas where so much of our industrial past is actually tucked away.
Well, let's look now at specific sites. Could you give us some examples of important industrial sites in New South Wales?
Well, that's a tall order in some ways, because simply because our knowledge of New South Wales is still so very spotty. I mean, it's where people are working and are interested that we know so much more. So one feels a bit guilty about saying, well, we know quite a few in the Hunter Valley, we know quite a lot in the County of Cumberland, all around Sydney, when we know full well that really there are some magnificent sites further out in New South Wales, and we're just desperate to hear about them. But every industry that we've touched upon is yielding some marvellous examples of sites so far. I can only give you the ones that have particularly interest me, then that instantly come to mind. I suppose gold mining has yielded a lot of sites that we all know about, the great the Junction Reefs Dam and the hydraulic system up there, the great pit at Peak Hill, the extensive remains of the various periods of settlement at Hill End, many more examples of water-powered gold mining works down in the Snowy Mountains region. Because remember, it's not only the industry, it's the type of power also that's associated with it that's interesting. Some industries are very ephemeral, like sawmilling. I mean, they come and they go, so that although they have left a great impact on the landscape, you can't really sort of point to a site and say, well, there's a great sawmilling site. At the same time, there are some fascinating old timber villages up in the upper Hunter region, up in the tributaries of the Hunter River, where you can still see the old company towns existing. Now, there's the most marvellous brewery down near Goulburn. The Goulburn Brewery, which was begun in 1836 and has got all the sort of appurtenances of a brewery, maltings and flour mills and so on. There's a tremendous range, and I can only just begin here and now to tell you some of them.
Well, thank you very much, Judy. It's been very interesting. And the National Trust is concerned for our heritage, and it needs your support. For membership details, ring 275374. The National Trust identifies and classifies items from our past which show changing technology and industrial development. Today, Judy Birmingham talks about protecting our industrial past. Judy, after locating and identifying a site or a particular industry, what are the next stages that someone then undertakes?
Well, the first thing, I suppose, is absolutely urgently to get it down on paper. You say locating and identifying, and although that sounds a very simple thing to do, a map reference, reference the local government authority, some concept of ownership which can be obtained by going to the local government authority is always very valuable, and then just an account of what's on the site. It's very often, I think, the case that, people who trip over something in the bush or perhaps down their own street and want to do something about it feel that the level of research that they might have to undertake is too great for them to cope with. But that is strictly not true. All that one needs to start work on a site, an industrial site like any other site for that matter, is to have the location put down on a bit of paper, the name of a contact, the local government authority, and really a comparatively minimal account of what's there, because then the work can start elsewhere. So I think that's the first thing. If you can send a photograph, that is an excellent idea too, of the more critical areas of the site. But I do think people should not feel that just because they're not expert, that they're not equipped to alert the trust to industrial items of importance.
Is there much variation in the conditions of industrial relics and sites?
Oh, tremendous amount indeed. I use myself a sort of a four-scale system ranging from still working and viable, because that, you see, with industrial sites, you're in a very difficult area in that once they stop being viable and practical, then they very quickly bite the dust because they're only there to work. And if they won't work, well, that's it. So you've got working and commercially viable sites. You've got ones that are on their last legs or have actually just stopped working. And those are the most vulnerable. They're in a very difficult state and very much open to vandalism. And then you've got sites which are derelict or ruins, where most of the vandalism, to be frank, has been done. And then finally, you've got the industrial sites, which are actually archaeological sites and are largely underground. And for that category, the main role is protection, simply to ensure that people don't move in and disturb that ground with a bulldozer or something. I mean, they're quite safe, so long as they're underground and no one can disturb the ground. So on the whole, they're the least of our problems, and it's that second category, the sites which have ceased their active, useful working life, that are very often in great danger.
So it's protection rather than preservation.
Well, yes, certainly in the first stages, because there's another point about industrial sites. They're often very expensive to maintain. You see, with ordinary classes of National Trust heritage, most of the items are houses or public buildings, and both of those can be reused fairly readily. Now, with industrial sites, it's very hard to find a new use for them, other than the existing traditional use. Therefore, one has to be much more careful and much more selective about the ones that one chooses for actual preservation. Once again, very often they need to be preserved in working condition, because that is the whole reason behind their existence in the first place. So we do find that the process of assessment is critical. And again, assessment largely has to be on a comparative basis over the whole of the state. I mean, it's no good suddenly saying, well, righto, look, here is the most magnificent coal mining site, and we want to preserve this one, when, in fact, you can find others with a more complete set of materials and equipment and some, you know, so elsewhere. I mean, one must have looked. And if we wish to retain credibility in putting forward sites as being the most important ones and important to maintain, then we've got to have done our homework. So assessment is the critical area. We must know, we want to hear about every industrial site that anyone can let us know about. And then on the basis of a much broader basis, we can select and recommend those which seem to be worthy of the considerable expense of management.
Well, what problems, finally, are faced by those wanting to protect remains?
To protect remains, well, there are specific means of doing so. First, one can apply to the Heritage Council of New South Wales for an actual nomination to protect the site if it seems to be under threat. But again, that's a sort of a holding mechanism, really, because the site then has to be researched. And so the filling in of one of the National Trust listing forms has to happen sooner or later in the process of protecting a site. And that includes, to begin with, location, name and address of owner, local government authority, some description of the remains, sketch, photograph, and then any items that the field worker can manage to add at the bottom, particularly any references or anything in the local records. And, of course, it can be followed up in the Trust, in Mitchell Library, but we're all short of staff, we're short of working hours, and we're very pleased the more work people can do.
Thank you, Judy. I've been speaking with Judy Birmingham from the Trust's Industrial Archaeology Committee. If you would like to learn more about the work of this committee or help in any way, ring this number, 275374. Hello, this is Chris Levins once again, talking with Judy Birmingham about the National Trust's involvement in industrial archaeology. Judy, how active is the industrial heritage field in New South Wales?
Well, it's certainly getting a lot more active than it was. The Industrial Archaeology Committee, the central one, is working on quite a broad front these days. But in addition, I think, a number of the regions are also becoming quite interested in this field. But even more important in some ways at the centre, I think, is the fact that the Industrial Archaeology Committee, well, the National Trust in general, has managed to set up a number of liaisons with state government departments who themselves own a large amount of the national heritage, the industrial heritage. For example, the State Rail Authority, which, of course, has the most marvellous, not only mobile items of equipment, but also the bridges and track and so on. We have a liaison committee with them, which is looking towards long-term planning of the retention of some of the more important items. The same with the Department of Main Roads. In fact, that was our first liaison committee, and I think one of our, so far it's been a very productive one, looking particularly at the area of bridges, road bridges, because a little planning and long-term survey in this way can ensure a much better use of resources, much more economic approach to the whole thing. So, for example, the Department of Main Roads, I know, has got a policy of preserving particularly a very fine range of road bridges in the Hunter Valley. I think there are about 11 up there now, each one of which is a particularly significant example of its type or of its date. And one can actually do a rather fine road bridge tour of the Hunter Valley. They're magnificent engineering creations. Another board with which we're just beginning such a liaison committee is the Sydney Water Board. And once again, you see some of those early dams include superb early Victorian engineering. Things like the Upper Nepean Scheme for Sydney Water Supply contains marvellous archaeological material. So I see that sort of area of survey and long-term planning, so that on a comparative basis one can select a wide range of industrial items which cover the state, so that a number of people can have access to them, and again a range of types of industry as being the sort of area in which we're working at the moment, and in which New South Wales is actually quite outgoing.
Is our industrial heritage protected though through legislation?
Well, it is protected. I mean, it's possible to protect it, as with all items of the heritage. The legislative clout is now there. But, of course, I think we are all aware nowadays that legislation alone is not sufficient. I mean, the community can support the legislation to the extent to which it wants to. And it's no good simply banging people over the head with legal provisions. I mean, one has simply got to work in this sort of liaison fashion and a coordinated fashion to encourage rather than to bash over the head. But, of course, in the final crunch, you have to use legal protection, and we do have a certain amount. The Heritage Act of New South Wales in 1977 contains provisions which apply to industrial sites the same as to any others. And, of course, for Commonwealth property, we have the Australian Heritage Act, which equally can be applied to industrial aspects.
Is much already protected?
An increasing amount. There are a number of industrial items on the trust register. But it's quite interesting that if people flick through the register, they may not, that is the big thick green register of sites, they probably will not be aware, they might think there aren't as many industrial sites as there should be. But the fact is that we have a much larger list of sites, which is simply called Industrial Sites List for New South Wales, which contains over 1,000 industrial sites, which has been circulated to the local government authorities concerned, and which is retained more or less on a provisional basis. And the reason for that was that the industrial sites register started off so far behind every other type of sites register in the trust that we had to have a bit of a blitz early on, and we simply couldn't go through the full assessment program for every individual site. We were doing about 20 a year at that rate. So we thought, well, what we'll do is to get a much larger coverage so that we can assess sites more readily. And so we did, in fact, amass. And we're well on our way, I think, now to our second 1,000 of such sites. And these are provisionally listed as sites of interest. And they're really an alerting register. So people won't see quite as many industrial sites in the register as they should do, but they should be assured that there are more. And any that they send us would go on that alerting register first.
Thanks very much, Judy. This has been a talk presented by the National Trust of Australia, a non-profit community organisation concerned with the conservation of Australia's heritage. For a membership form, ring 275374. Right.
Now up to episode 39.
Right here. In this final discussion with Judy Birmingham, we discuss the work of the National Trust of Australia in the conservation of our industrial heritage. Judy, in what areas of industrial heritage is the National Trust working?
Well, I suppose in the first place it's continuing with the traditional role of the Trust through its committees, which has always been the identification and listing of industrial sites. That work continues, and we're always looking to site visits and particularly regional visits to increase the number of the sites, the industrial sites we know about. Secondly, we are concerned to look into the question of future protection of those sites, particularly on a plan base, by means of the sort of liaison committees I mentioned last time. That is to say, liaison committees with state departments, such as the Department of State Rail Authority, Department of Main Roads, so that one can be looking over the next 15 years or so to the sort of long-term selection of items for conservation. And a third area in which we've increasingly had to offer assistance to people is in that of management of industrial sites once they are under protection. And of course that's a rather time-consuming area, although it's a very rewarding one because it's the thing to which we are actually looking. And that, if one isn't careful and one is short-staffed, that's an area which can take up a great deal of time.
Well, what does the Trust see as its main concern?
Well, I think its main concern, and I think it's a good point to raise, because these things are all time-consuming and they all have to be done. I think our major role, and it's one that we must never lose sight of, is in that of assessment, because I see our committee's role as the body which, for better or worse, is the one which says, on the basis of wide comparative knowledge of different sites, and we have been building it up over the last 15 years, we are the group which says we think that this site is important enough to warrant protection, or we're prepared to say, well, look, there are others of the same kind, it's not a particularly good example, we're going to record it, but we think it doesn't matter too much if it goes. So assessment, I think, is pretty critical.
Now, finally, what is the future role of the National Trust in the preservation of our industrial heritage?
Well, obviously, I think these same roles of recording industrial sites, liaison with the bodies who own them, a great many of them, and management advice will continue. I think our role in assessment will be increasingly important. I'd like to see us extend more into the regions. I don't think that the survey and planning for industrial conservation can be carried out from Sydney, from the centre. I think it must be done by means of regional groups, and I know that the Trust is developing regional groups as well as it can, and I'm hoping very much that they will take the industrial heritage under their wing as well as the more conventional areas of heritage. But a role which I think is increasingly critical as far as industrial conservation is concerned is that of public encouragement to participate, to enjoy its own industrial heritage. We are moving into a time when, whether we want it or not, there is going to be increasing leisure among members of the community, when work, which after all has occupied us all so much up to the present time, is going to be decreasing in the demands it makes upon us, and when I do think there's going to be a much greater opportunity for people at large to look at the products and values and standards of past work, particularly the 19th and early 20th century. And so I would see public education through the schools, and participation above all, because industrial archaeology is the most marvellous subject for people actually to go and do. I mean, the questions that it requires from people are the questions that we all have ourselves about things, you know. How does it work? Why did they do it this way? What else could they have done? What other solutions could have been brought to the way they built this particular wall or carried out that particular lime working program? And it doesn't take very much knowledge to get a great deal out of this type of inquiry into the countryside. So I would hope that we shall branch out, in addition to all the other roles that we have to do, to assisting our own community to enjoy its own industrial past a great deal more than perhaps it has today.
Judy Birmingham, thanks for talking with us today. This is Chris Levins, and you've been listening to a talk presented by the National Trust, a non-profit community organisation concerned with the conservation of Australia's heritage. For a membership form, ring this number, 275374. Hello, I'm Chris Levins from the New South Wales National Trust. Today we begin the first in a series of discussions with Judy Birmingham, Chairman of the Trust's Industrial Archaeology Committee. Judy, why look at Australia's industrial past?
Well, I think the major reason is that, first of all, there are a lot of reasons, of course, but one of them is that work, which is what industry is all about, is something which has involved most of us for anything up to 99% of our time, certainly up to the present day. What the future holds, we don't know, but it's been very much a dominant theme, certainly the 19th and 18th centuries. And yet it's something which makes a very small contribution so far to the heritage as conserved.
Well, what period of Australia's past does industrial archaeology deal with?
Right up to the present day, I think. Industry starts in this country, certainly before white settlement, but we largely concern ourselves with the period from 1788 onwards, and right up to certainly about the 1950s, when some very traditional techniques were still in use. But I mean, even up to the present day, you'll still find some amazing examples of early 20th century technology surviving in various parts of the state. And indeed, really, of course, it doesn't cut off even now, because the history of work and the means of doing it is a continuing subject. So, of course, we really should be going on even into the future.
Quite. But what is the value, then, of industrial heritage?
Well, once again, I think it's concerned with the fact that we as a culture, and I mean Western culture generally, has spent so much of its time and effort on work, and so many of its values have been concerned with work, that it would be a great mistake, and indeed it's very damaging to us, suddenly to see relics of what we spent so much time and effort on just consigned to oblivion. And I think that urban sociologists have actually found studies to prove just that. People find it very damaging in ways that they don't really know when this part of themselves is just obliterated from the landscape.
Now, what expertise does someone need to study the industrial past?
Very little, really, except interest and a certain amount of intellectual curiosity. You just need to be interested in how things were done, how it was that at that particular place, at that particular time, a certain process, together with the people connected with it, took place in the way that it did. So intellectual curiosity, I'd say, is certainly the first point. After that, it helps if you can use your eyes, walk over the landscape, try and work out from the physical remains what sort of processes went on. And then it's handy if you've got a camera, if you can start to sketch maps and plans, but that's much less important than just participating. It's a sort of a hobby for everyone, and it's non-damaging, which is the other point. I mean, we're not talking about digging these things up in any sense. We're talking about looking at them in such a way that the remains themselves talk back to us.
Well, let's look at those remains in a little more detail. What should we be preserving?
What should we be preserving? Well, preserving, I think, covers a range of different objectives. Some remains, I think, we should just allow to survive. That is to say, take a non-active form of preservation. Things like old mining sites in isolated situations where they're not constituting either a threat to us, and we, on the whole, are not constituting a threat to them, and the fact that they're weathering and there's a certain amount of external vandalism still doesn't affect the nature of the total site and the layout of the remains, and one can still walk over these places and work out a great deal of the story. In other situations, obviously, we, especially things like a coal mine in a coal mining district, or perhaps a working brewery, something of this kind, in those situations, one wants to select items which are either particularly complete, particularly historic, for some specific association, or simply typical, very typical, and they are going to preserve a good range of that traditional technology for people to continue to look at and question.
Judy Birmingham, thanks very much. And you've been listening to a talk about our industrial heritage, presented by the National Trust of Australia. If you'd like to learn more about the work of the National Trust in New South Wales, ring 27 5374.